Welcome to the Humane Roundup Podcast, where we share all the exciting stories about animal cruelty investigations, dangerous animals, and amazing rescues. Find out what goes on inside of animal shelters and all the current trends in the animal welfare industry. Now, here is your host, Daniel Ettinger.
And his amazing co-host, Ashley Bishop. How is it going? Episode 82 is up and running.
Wow. 82. I was actually thinking about that today. I'm like, crap, what number are we at now?
How's it going over there in the great state? We're like close right now.
We are.
Wisconsin, and I'm down here in Missouri today.
You're only about 8 hours from me. 8 hour drive.
Well, I'm not doing that, so I'll just wave at you through the St. Louis Arch. Don't forget to like this podcast on Apple Podcasts. You know, we haven't done that a lot. I haven't really said, like, hey, can you like this and review this podcast? So if you're listening, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen, and give us some good feedback. Don't forget to check us out on our social media pages, Humane Roundup, H.O. Bishop, and Animal Protection Officer Daniel on all those socials. So,
yeah, the more you guys like it and review it, the more popular, like, more people be able to see it. So we can reach out to some of those people that maybe still haven't had a chance to check us out and could really benefit from it.
You know, and it's a great segue into what I wanted to talk about before I get our first guest on. I'm excited that we're really going to keep it humane Maine today on the episode. So I'm excited about that. But before we get into it, I wanted to talk about that. And so this podcast started before COVID. BC is what I like to call it, before COVID. And, you know, at that time we were doing in-person trainings. People were all over the country, you know, doing that type of stuff. And as we all know, it's kind of switched to these Zoom trainings or Microsoft Teams training, or what's the other one? Google Meets training, right? So all this, these platforms have become digitalized. Is that a word, digitalized?
It is now.
And I think it's great in some aspects, especially from a budgetary perspective, right? You have no cost of travel, lodging, per diem, etc. But I tell you what, there is nothing like in-person training.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I miss it. I am excited this week. I'm going to be hosting a training for 3 days. So nice. I'll be, shout out to LETI for making this happen. We're doing a training out here in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
In Fort Lost in the Woods.
Yeah. Speaking of Fort Lost in the Woods, I'm doing this show outside. I just watched a man lose his shoe crossing the street. So ain't nothing like recording outside of a studio to watch people. And it was pretty funny.
So what are your topics?
Oh, wait, what? Wait, who?
What? What are your topics for that you're training?
Yeah, so this is, I'm glad you asked, but it's really animal welfare link oriented, domestic violence, family violence, animal, you know, sex assault, animal ritual crime, blood, you know, blood sports, dog fighting, that type of stuff. So kind of the whole gambit.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. How about you? What's good? What's going on up there?
Coming to the end of my licensing saga and having to go, you know, visit over 300 homes now to figure out, is your animal even still here? Do you even live here anymore? And here's your citation.
That's insane. That's 3 weeks in the making that we've talked about your licensing saga. So,
well, this started back in February. Like,
well,
the saga's
it got
been
really,
ongoing.
Yeah, but it got really kind of crazy a few weeks ago. And if you missed missed that, check that out a few episodes ago. You and your licensing. So should we tease that? Should we tease this upcoming episode that people might be excited to hear?
I'm excited to hear about it. I think we should.
You should tease. I think you should tease it.
Well, I had to, because I thought we were recording it this week, I re-binge watched all of Tiger King so that I could get some questions together for Miss Carol Baskin.
You got to join us, for that episode. Coming soon. It's coming soon.
I've told a couple of people about it, and, like, I have gotten the drop jaw, oh my fucking god, are you fucking serious? When is this episode airing? Like, people are stoked.
Well, tune in for that. It's coming right around the corner, so you won't want to miss. I think it's going to be episode 83. We might do 84. We'll see. We'll see, but it's likely going to be next week, so
yes.
We'll get it in there as soon as we can. All right, so anything else going on up there?
Not really. The weather's getting nicer, starting to get some gardening done, and other than that, no, not really. Nothing big up here. Not a, you know, we probably should talk to her about the tiger that was loose in Texas. Did you see that?
I did, and I'm excited to ask her about that. And that's part of the reason that I want to get her on the show is because, you know, some of our listeners really may deal with large cats. It's not as uncommon as you think. I mean, a cat living in someone's basement or backyard, Texas, there's so much space out there. And so, you know, when we talk to her, we'll definitely talk about some of those aspects of how they get those cats. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Let's keep it super humane, Maine, on this program. Okay. We're going to introduce our next guest, who is none other than Liam Hughes. He's the Director of Animal Welfare for the Department of Agricultural Conservation and Forestry with the state of Maine.
Welcome, Liam.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Perfect.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you guys just fine.
How's it going, man?
Working great.
Technology is technology, man.
Yeah,
that's for sure. So we wanted to just say how's it going and have you introduce yourself really quickly. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast, taking time out of your day to record and update some of our listeners what's going on in the great state of Maine.
Oh, great. Where did you want me to start? There's so many things that are happening here.
I think we should start with the introduction and just kind of give our listeners a little bit of who Liam Hughes is and kind of how you got to where you are today.
Well, long, long time ago, Mom met Dad, and after a little while, I came out. You know, I pretty much got my start back in, like, you know, the early 80s and everything like that. When Mom and Dad got divorced, the part of the 2 weeks that I was spending with my dad was when he was a police officer, he would cover for animal control during that time he had me and my brother. And we got to learning the dog pound, because it was a dog pound. Hosing down kennels, taking care of the animals. And by the time I turned 17 and was in high school, my summer job was doing the animal control for a couple weeks out of the summer. So nice. That's kind of where I got my start. And then I took a detour into retail management for a little while because, you know, selling video games at Funko Land was fun, but, you know, it couldn't last forever. You know, and then I got really tired of it, and I started looking for something that actually had some meaning and purpose. You know, I was on the list for the fire department in New Jersey, and I got went through a bunch of different testing looking for different things. But then I was also volunteering at the local animal shelter, and they said that the contract for animal control was coming up in the next town over. And the guy that was currently doing it wasn't really that good at his job and may have been drinking a little bit too much.
Oh.
So, yeah. So it made it pretty much a lot easier for me to kind of show up, you know, clean, dressed, well-spoken, you know, with, you know, nice new equipment and start getting contracts. And my first contract was for $83 a month. So
wow.
In a tiny little town. Yeah. And, but still it was work that was worth doing. And then I kind of cut my teeth, at this small town and, you know, worked my way up and got more contracts. And then, you know, the gas prices shot up and insurance prices shot up. So I had to go do something else. So I became a shelter manager out in Cheyenne, Wyoming for a little bit and director of animal control in Washington, D.C. after that. And then for some strange reason, about 10 years ago, I found myself up here in Maine. And I had a special set of skills where I could talk humane language to the shelters. I could talk breeding language to dog breeders because my dad was also, he worked for the AKC after he retired from the police department doing their investigations. And then I could also talk municipal level stuff to the towns. And that's kind of where my current job is now, where I have to work with all the animal shelters and rescues, the pet stores, the breeding kennels, the research facilities, the boarding kennels. And I kind of have to speak a common language to everybody, get them all on the same playing field. And while I'm doing that, I'm also training all the animal control officers in the state twice a year. I'm also writing laws and regulations for animal control officers and animal issues that are within the state. I've been on a couple different task force, one of which involves exotic animals in the state, which I'm looking forward to next week's conversation. So because
I think everybody is.
Well, you know, as one of the regulators that was at the task force at the meeting, my answer is like, you know, all right, how about we just say no to everything that's exotic? You know, that will make our life so much easier. But I was a minority, but everything is still very regulated and permitted here. So, you know, all the stuff that Carol gets is not allowed in here. So, you know, and
well, that's a really great resume, man. It sounds like you've really, in addition to just the life experiences, you've kind of found your life's work, right? You've got in here and really do what you, something that you love to do.
Yeah. I just, you know, this is just something that was easy because I always had a good connection with animals and I could always kind of use that Irish diplomacy with people of, you know, basically being able to talk myself out of situations. As you're going to find out today, give me a soapbox and I will stand on it for at length to talk about anything. So,
well, okay. So with that perspective, I got to know, do you encourage the humane officers, animal control? What are they called up in Maine?
Well, the six agents, the humane agents I have working for me are humane agents. Then we have about 400 plus animal control officers scattered around the state.
Okay. So do you encourage them to wear bulletproof vests?
I think body armor, because nothing is truly bulletproof, but I think armor is necessary to have, but it's also how you're approaching the situation. You know, 9 times out of 10, when you show up looking like a SWAT officer, that the person that you're talking to a lot of times is going to go on the defensive. So you have to really take into account your image as you're walking up.
I got to argue that a little bit. I feel like I don't need a bulletproof vest for my command presence. That's not something that I would want in that aspect. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with you that, you know, we as humans make snap judgments, right? We just do. That's
right.
It's a flight or fight. How do you say that, Ashley?
Fight or flight. But I think that's animal right. Kingdom wide.
Right. Yeah. So think about it, though. And I get it. So if you have maybe a preconceived notion of law enforcement and I'm walking up in a SWAT uniform or just that outer vest really puffed out, I get it. But at the same time, and we had one of your buddies on, Todd Stosi, a few episodes ago. Check that out if you haven't listened to it yet. But, you know, he has a full beard, tattoos. And I just think if you're allowed to look like the community that you represent, even if you're in a full uniform, that delivery, that first few sentences that you say is really going to dictate how everything goes. It might take a minute to de-escalate, but at the same time, that person's going to recognize, okay, this is a good person talking to me. They're not hiding behind that badge and or body armor.
Right. And I don't, not that I'm trying to argue with you or anything, but I do agree there's a place and time. I think every animal control officer out in the field, anybody who's doing any type of enforcement action should have access to body armor. But knowing when you have to go concealed compared to outer carrier, knowing when you have to kind of go with a soft touch compared to going in hard, that's where the best defensive tool you have is the gray matter in between your ears. You know, being able to read the situation, being able to read your community, you know, depending on what's going on. Because again, you know, a lot of people see just a uniform, they automatically assume the worst. You know, they automatically think it's the worst. And one of the best things I did in DC was that we changed the uniform from leftover the baby blue uniform shirts to, yeah, we went to a gray polo shirt with ACO in the back. And yeah, we had the DC flag on our shoulder, but I had people coming up to me amazed at the fact that I'm being nice to them. I'm representing the government and I'm nice to them. I'm talking to them. I'm giving them resources. I'm not sitting there waving a law book in their face and telling them they have to do it. So that part of community engagement is really important, where, you know, you basically present yourself as somebody who is educated and that wants to help. But on the same aspect, and this is one of the things my dad taught me as a cop, he was a cop for years. He's like, you want to be have that image where a five-year-old who's lost and scared will come up and ask you for help, but the bad guys won't want to mess with you. So that's the kind of image that you kind of have to find for yourself about how it is. And everybody, when you put that vest on, the outer carrier especially, and oh man, that helps your back posture, you stand a little taller and you feel a little bit more better, and you want to get those Oakleys on and look all tough and everything. But, you know, like I said, there's a time and place for that. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll let you know their intentions within the first few seconds. And all of our animal control officers and our humane agents are unarmed. So if somebody is coming up and being aggressive to us and, you know, threatening us and everything, we're turning around and we're leaving. And we're going to come back with our law enforcement friends to deal with the situation. It's a little bit more time consuming, but much safer. You know, we try to evaluate the situation. We present ourselves as there to help first, because we can't help the animals if we're not helping the people. And that's one of the key things. We never had an animal call us and ask us for help. It's always been something's going on out there, and it could be a loss of a job. Somebody had passed away recently who was the main animal caretaker, a sickness, or most of the problems that we're seeing nowadays are mental health related. So that's been our biggest challenge, where in most of the areas of our state, we don't have a lot of mental health resources to deal with these.
I chuckled at that one part because, you know, now that somebody somewhere is going to get a call from like a parrot saying, help me, help me.
All right. With the exception of the one talking parrot that says, hey,
well, there's so much I want to talk to you about. And I think one part of that is that approach that a lot of agencies are taking is more of that community policing or the humane approach to the field, not just the animals, right? How you interact with the public. But in addition to that, I want to know more about Maine in some aspects, because as our listeners are all over the country and even in other countries, here in the States, we have an interesting dynamic. In my mind, and help me out on this, Liam, but in my mind, Maine is like an island for puppies. Like, you don't get them up there. And I think that a lot of people are trucking them in from Texas and New Orleans, et cetera, where they're maybe not as strict animal welfare laws and more puppy mills, et cetera. How does that look in your state for puppies?
Well, we did a great job with spay and neuter over the past 20 years to the point where we no longer have a pet overpopulation problem. We have an underpopulation problem, but yet still the demand for animals is through the roof. It's something that my mind couldn't wrap in the beginning of COVID. I thought, you know, just the opposite was going to happen, that we're going to see an influx of animals coming into the shelter. I was totally surprised, and I enjoy being wrong sometimes. So this is one of those times I was happy I was wrong. So many shelters, you know, just emptied out completely, you know, and then there's still more people coming in looking for animals. So we regulate all the dogs that are imported in from out of state. You have to have a permit to import them in from my department, and you have to be a licensed animal shelter or pet store in order to sell them in the state. So we regulate that very heavily. We do have a few bad actors that kind of fall through the cracks, and, you know, we spend some time chasing them around and take some time to get through the court process, but, you know, that still happens. But we have about 155 animal shelters and rescues here in the state. Most of them do really good work. You know, the big trick is these fly-by-night operations that show up at a truck rest stop that sold these animals on Craigslist or Overstock.com or some weird website. You can
get puppies on Overstock.com?
Yeah, I haven't checked it lately, but yeah, you could adopt a dog from Overstock.com.
I like it.
I don't know that would be an adoption per se.
Yeah, and it's weird because, again, it's fueled by this drive for the public to get these animals. And a lot of times, you know, some of these people are shysters that are basically, they're offering you something, and when you finally go to get it, it's not what you thought it was. It's, you're charging more money. You have to have cash on the side of a road, you know, in the middle of Maine. It just, everything that should be shady, that little warning voice in everybody's head that this isn't right, doesn't go off until after it's too late. So then we start getting the complaints about these heartworm positive or the dogs with parvo. Yeah. Or, you know, behavior issues. The behavior issues are the biggest thing right now, because all the cute and innocent teddy bear animals have been adopted out, or they get snatched up quickly.
So yeah, now they don't have that mother or that family bond where they're learning some critical skills.
Or they're coming out of hoarding situations, you know, that there are behavior issues that whatever shelter that they're in from down south, they don't have the resources to really kind of take a look at this animal and give it the help that it needs. So they have 50 more animals coming in. So if they can get these 5 animals out, that's good for them. And I understand it. I get it. I've been right where they were 20 years ago. I saw a lot of that stuff, but now it's now basically pushing the problem off someplace else. And luckily for me, you know, I'm very grateful for the fact that we have a lot of really good shelters up here that are working hard. One other thing to realize about Maine is that a lot of people forget that we're here. I mean, they think that Maine has lobsters and blueberries and it's a nice place to visit, a lot of lakes and everything. They might know the state from the movie Lake Placid and giant alligators running around eating people, which is total fiction, but still nice to see my state represented. But they also have to realize that 70% of the population lives in the southern half of the state of Portland. So that's where all the people and the resources are. When you go further out, it gets far more sparse. You see more unorganized territories and a lot less resources to go around. And
I would imagine that's where your hoarders live, a lot of them.
Yeah, most of the folks that I've been dealing with for the past 10 years are people that have come up from Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, and they move into the woods to cut themselves off from the rest of humanity. And that's where we start finding the problems. It's just that they don't want to interact with people. But here we are forcing that interaction. So we start getting back into that whole mental health component of things because, you've seen the pictures and you've been in the same house as I have and everything where you need a shovel to scrape the poo out of your way to walk down the hall. That's sure. Always a good sign. It's a hoarding house if there's a shovel for the poo in the hallway. So, you know, we have people up here that they basically turn one room into a trash room where they basically throw all their trash and they think that's normal.
Yeah.
So
it's not.
No, no. They have these things called the dump. You have to go every Saturday to drop off your stuff at.
I got to fix my house up then.
Yeah. Or at least add more garbage rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Maine has a lot of interesting challenges. I mean, where when you start looking down south, you start seeing more, maybe some more animal fighting issues, but hoarding seems to be the big issue up here. People not spaying and neutering their animals and moving out into middle of nowhere to be left alone.
Go ahead, Ashley. It's fine.
I was going to just say, you had mentioned that you've been involved with a lot of the different laws and stuff, and you said what 8 different laws have come into effect under your leadership. I mean, Maine is the top ranking state, and you obviously had a hand in that. So what were the 8 laws that you actually got enacted?
Well, we keep fine tuning the laws. The laws were pretty good when I got up here. So there's just always something that can be fine-tuned. One of the best things I think that we did was we legalized the crazy cat lady. I think that was the biggest thing that we did was when I looked at the law when I first came on board, trapping cats was technically illegal because it was trapping animals was governed by Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. You needed a permit to trap anything, no matter how you trapped it. And then the Inland Fisheries and Wildlife didn't issue permits for trapping cats. So there was not a big drive for dealing with feral cat issues. And feral cat issues were huge. I mean, every town was screaming that they don't want to deal with cat issues because it's expensive and they're paying their animal control officer a per diem instead of a salary. So we had to figure out a way of dealing with the situation. So I put my head together with a couple people, like one of which was Katie Linzik, who's now the executive director of the Greater Androscoggin Humane Society. And we basically came up with a plan and made definitions for humanely trapping and defined that. And we also made definitions for population control efforts. And then we wrote it in the law saying that you can trap and spay neuter these cats for TNR. So basically that reduced the amount of cats going into the shelters if they were barn cats or a straight up feral colony. And we also made it so that it wasn't totally the responsibility of the town. The town could look for outside resources, such as Friends of Feral Felines or the local animal shelter wants to do fundraising for it. So they can partner with a local organization to go out and trap and neuter these cats. So therefore, they're not going into the shelter. They're not being euthanized for space. They're not spreading diseases around. So, and the problems were being dealt with. And just over that 10-year period that since we enacted the law, you can actually see the euthanasia rate from 75% drop down to 95% for live release rates. You know, we only have a 3% euthanasia rate right now in the entire state.
I'm sure some of our listeners are like, that's incredible. And so I think what I'd like to do is in the show notes, maybe throw your email address in there if people have questions specifically to some of the things you've worked on that maybe you're able to lend a hand. I think that would be really beneficial for our listeners. It's, you know, it's one thing to listen to a show, but I know there's people that want to take action and make change. I mean, Ashley, you're one of those people that don't have a state association, and it's something that you're continuously working on. And so I'm sure other people are out there with similar ideas or similar situations that, Liam, you might have experience in. So that's helpful.
Well, the thing I have to point out, too, is I didn't do this in a vacuum. I did this with collaboration with a lot of different groups. I'm lucky the fact that there is an Animal Control Officer Association here in the state. I'm glad that there is a Federation of Humane Societies in the state. I'm also glad that there's a Federation of Dog Clubs in the state, too. So having all these different organizations is helpful. We have what's called the Animal Welfare Advisory Council that basically is supposed to help, you know, give suggestions to the department, and that's where we talk about a lot of the law changes. And we went out and we saw the veterinarian, the dog breeders, the boarding kennels, the cooperative extension for the university. And, you know, we brought a lot of these different voices together and we started working on this legislation. And then, you know, if I could get all these different voices, all these different viewpoints to agree on something, oh, right there, that's the game changer. You know, that right there is, if we can get the dog clubs, the AKC people to agree with the Humane Society people, that means we're doing something right.
Well, let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsor.
Millions of dogs are abandoned each year because of behavioral and aggression issues. Owners are using improper methods to train their dogs, which may be the cause. If you are eager to find training content that fits your need and don't want to be overwhelmed by massive, unstructured online resources, check out Sniffy. You can customize your own training plan and learn how to train your dog step by step with video tutorials. Sniffy will also help you create your own daily practice list and establish your training routine. Download Sniffy on the App Store or Google Play Store today.
And I'm sure Ashley has a few questions and I have a few questions when we return. All right, cool. We're back. great thing about editing. Thanks, Tim. Anyway, Ashley, you want to jump in with a follow-up?
Well, I mean, I definitely want to reach out to you about that because, I mean, the cats is definitely a huge thing and in a lot of our discussions around my town, even.
The best law I can point to is Lisa LaFontaine of Washington, D.C., she's now head of the Washington Rescue Alliance, formerly the Washington Humane Society. And I stole that idea from her. I will flat out say I plagiarized her work on this because, you know, Washington, D.C. used that legislation first. And it was great.
You didn't steal it. You did not reinvent the wheel.
Nope. I stole that wheel right off that car and ran with it.
I love it.
Well, good. But yeah. There's a lot of inspiration out there that you can get from working with other people.
And that's where I kind of want to segue into the next topic that we had on hand. And it sounds like you're involved in training. So is it training humane officers? Or are you also involved in training the new animal control officers? And did I ask, does the state of Maine do dog wardens as well? Or is it just animal control and humane officers?
It's pretty much animal control officers. The humane agents work for this Department of Agriculture, and they are responsible for inspecting about 550 animal facilities every year. That's the boarding kennels, breeding kennels, animal shelters, pet stores. And then they are also responsible for humane investigations of animal cruelty, which we average about 300 to 400 a year. So it's probably going to be a little bit lighter this past year because of COVID, but, you know, we are still out there doing stuff. The animal control officers, there's an average about 450. They cover multiple towns in some cases. Not many of them are employed by their local police departments. A lot of them are private contractors. And the further north you go, you know, you start seeing the pay scales go way down.
Didn't you tell me something offline, like $300 a year?
There was one animal control officer that was getting paid $300 a year. Now, mind you,
I hope that's only on call.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not the type of animal control that you do full time. It's basically, there's probably about 150 to 200 people in his community, and he knows every dog. So when a dog gets loose, you know, he's going to go deal with it, but he's not going to deal with the feral cats. He's not going to deal with, you know, other problems that you might be experiencing. So a lot of the animal control officers we have are not supported financially from their towns because the towns just don't have the funding for it. So we train the animal control officers. We put out basic training every 6 months. COVID did put a pause on that. But we did about 2 years ago, we started working on making core competencies for the animal control officers and putting them online for training. So all the basic things that you need to do your animal control job, the concepts of what you're doing and why you're doing it and how to deal with the court system, write reports, the very basic stuff that you need is online. And we charge only $50 for this training. And that's phase one of the training. Phase two, which is also covered in that $50, is the practical where you're using the hands-on, how to use your equipment, how to actually engage in the conversations and de-escalate a problem. How do you act in court? How do you approach a case when you're going into court and you have to testify? So that's the more practical side of things that we're trying to teach.
How many hours of training is that?
We're trying to keep it around 40 hours of training. Okay. So, and then all animal control officers by law are required to do 8 hours of continuing education every year afterwards. So, one of the things I did was, you can only do the same course so many times. There's a limited amount, especially 10 years ago, very limited amount of animal cruelty investigator or animal control courses out there. And they were $600, $700 a pop in some cases, yeah, and you had to travel for them.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. So, you know, we basically made it that it was going to be your continuing education is anything that can help you in the course of your duties.
So, ladies and gentlemen listening to the Humane Roundup podcast right now, write down your listening time. And that could be considered as humane or continuing education.
Yes. So, you know, if it's a CPR first aid course, that's acceptable because you're out there interacting with the public. If your fire department is doing a driver safety course where all the fire or police that you can get involved in, if there's any training that you can get through the police department about interview techniques or questioning techniques that you can do because you're talking to people sometimes about things that they don't want to talk about, like Fluffy bit somebody and they don't want you to take Fluffy away and euthanize them. So how do you talk to somebody about that to reassure them? Even some cases, like we have a very large Somali community that moved up here, and then there's also a new Iraqi community that moved up here. If you want to do these language courses to help you interact with your community, you know, we would accept that as your CE credit.
I want to put another plug in here. One thing I forgot when we were discussing with the ASPCA, when I went out on my deployments, I was actually able to get my state to recognize 8 hours of volunteer work with them as continuing education credits because we need 32 every 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if you missed that episode, if you're listening, just check it out. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It's some great stuff. The forensic stuff that they do, the lab that they have, and the training and the ability to go assist them is great. So just be creative with your continuing education and check in. Like, we have a bureau of animal protection in the state. It's run by the Department of Ag. Similar to what I guess Liam does there in Maine. And sometimes we'll have continuing education opportunities that aren't, we have questions about it, right? And so we email our director there and ask them, hey, is this going to count towards CE? And sure enough, most of the times it does.
Yeah. And that's one of the things too, that we really encourage animal control officers to get involved with was the emergency management agency. We count anything having to do with emergency management towards their CE credit. A lot of times, you know, Maine's lucky in the fact that we, shelter in place like nobody's business. I mean, most of the time we get blizzards and ice storms, we know how to hunker down. We spend all summer getting ready for the winter, canning food, chopping firewood. Yeah, we're pretty much ready to go for the winter time. But
you were ready for COVID.
Well, you know, it didn't. You know, if you know, if you watch the trends and everything like that, it didn't spread as fast up here as it did in other states. So,
sure.
You know, we tend to be very community oriented up here. So we want our animal control officers getting to know their community, working with fire departments, working with other local police departments, other animal control officers, the Department of Transportation, which I have to say is one of our biggest allies in anything that we're doing. Because our Department of Transportation can move almost anything, anywhere, and short notice as fast as can be. So we set up emergency shelters a lot of times. In 2019, DOT gave us a building, and we set up an emergency shelter because we did a seizure of a breeding kennel. We took out 175 animals from this facility. Most of it were collies, a couple Dobermans, horses, and other livestock, a few cats. But most of it were our collies that were popping out puppies left and right. And we set up an emergency shelter that hold about 79 of them. And I lived at this shelter for 33 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's that kind of how long it took for the court process to work around and a plea deal to be arranged. But that emergency shelter, the DOT gave us a building. They helped us transport everything that we need to there, get there. So having those types of partnerships are so important to what we do. And they make your life so much easier if you have a partnership or at least a memorandum of understanding with other departments that are out there that could help you with something.
If you had a magic wand that you could wave at our profession to give you one, like to give our profession one thing, what would it be?
Other than unlimited funding?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I would probably say I would want everybody who interacts with people in our profession to have some understanding, to acknowledge it is a difficult job. And, you know, we never have enough funding or equipment or time that we can get our stuff done. So not everybody truly understands what we do. And that goes from the public to our supervisors, you know, the people that work in other departments or agencies. I mean, you see those pictures on social media where they're just those six pictures of this is what people think I do. This is what I really do. Mm-hmm. This is what, you know, people expect. Yeah. It's like that where people think it's all puppies and kittens all day long. And there's a lot of tragedy and heartache in our job. There's a lot of frustration, low pay. I mean,
do you consider our profession to be first responders?
Yes.
No, that's a consistent not. Yes with everyone we ask. And maybe it's because we're asking everyone that is somewhat understanding and connected to what we do, but sure. we need that to be known from the people that don't necessarily know what we do, the elected officials, or like you were saying, managers, because once they see us in that light, maybe some of those asks will be easier.
Exactly. And, you know, we are first responders, but not in the same way. The one thing I've had conversations with a few of my higher ups is that some of them have been really afraid of us becoming SWAT team and animal cops that we're going to just smash in the door and take everything. And we're going to damage agriculture. You know, they're going to stop farmers from farming. And that's not the case at all. This is why I say we need understanding, because people expect the worst. And, you know, the one thing people keep going back to is that animal cops TV show. And they think that's how it is every time. And it's like, sure. No, there's so much of that stuff that ended up on the editing room floor. Our job is far more nuanced than that. So we are talking to people most of the time. We're trying to find solutions. I mean, we all want to go home and watch Jeopardy tonight. We want to go home safe. So trying to find that understanding to make things just a little bit better is really difficult. So, you know, we're not, you know, that cop walking down the beat and stealing apples off apple carts. You know, we are out there trying to tie in resources. And then when something bad happens, like, you know, there's a car accident and there's a dog in the car. You know, the police officer who has been trained to deal with domestic violence or crime scene investigation or a number of other things, he wasn't trained how to deal with an aggressive dog standing over its owner protecting it. So, you know, you have to have people that are trained in these different things to be able to respond to problems.
Well, and in addition to that, my perspective of first responder of our profession is there's a dog on dog attack happening. and it's active and you get there first, or a dog bite to a human and it's active and you get there first, or someone is bludgeoning an animal and you get there first. Now, you know, now you have a, your own safety risk, right? In all those cases. And so I just want it to be known, you know, for people that may not know that, yeah, we're in inherently dangerous situations, whether it's dealing with the same individual that the police officers are dealing with, whatever it may be. And so I just, I appreciate your insight. Appreciate all the work that you do there in Maine. I'm glad that we were able to get you on the show and really talk about, I feel we could talk for hours. I feel there's so much stuff that you've experienced and so much stuff that we've just uncovered with some of the work that you do in Maine. And
I feel like we need to like encapsulate his brain somehow so that eventually many, many years from now.
Well, if you've ever seen Futurama, we can just walk him around.
Exactly.
Fishbowl.
As long as we can talk to it and stuff, I want to be able to use his information.
Well, I'm welcome to come back because officer safety is a big thing for me. I've been put in situations that I'm lucky I've come out of in one piece. I've had my fair share of dog bites, and you know, once you get bit once or twice, you learn not to do it again. So, I mean, I'm lucky the fact that, you know, I'm pretty large guy and everything like that. So I know I can be intimidating when I need to be, and I also know I can be a teddy bear when I don't need to be intimidating. So.
Did you have any questions for us? We're the ones that usually ask all the questions, but we like to have our listeners, you know, if they have questions for the show, feel free, man.
No, I mean, you know, what you guys are doing are really important because you're giving a voice to a lot of animal control officers out there who are. When I first met Todd Soucy, I was at HSUS Expo and he was presenting, and he was presenting about topics that he was doing that I had been thinking about. I've been wishing that we could do something like that. And he was already doing it. And he was talking my language. And he was having the same thoughts I was having. And I wasn't alone. And that's the most important thing that I found out, you know, that there are other people out there like me, that they think what I think, that they are doing what I wish I could do or what I'm trying to do. So, you know, I really think that everybody listening to this should click subscribe and then send it off to their friends that hit subscribe as well, too. So that's how important this topic is. But is there anything that you guys have seen in the course of your 82 podcast that you wish you would cover more, or you think that maybe this might be an issue that's been resolved?
Yeah, I think as we continue to evolve as a show, I would like to really get more pointed in certain topics. We've had, a few episodes ago, we had the clinical professor at Denver University, Phil Tedeschi, on, and, you know, he works on forensic animal maltreatment evaluations, right? And so as we continue, if possible, obviously we'd have to redact some information, but let's talk through what an actual forensic animal maltreatment evaluation looks like. Let's read it word by word and what findings they had. I think our listeners would love to hear stuff like that. Or let's have some specific case studies and things that maybe that they could learn from in that aspect. You know, my buddy of mine is starting his podcast here soon. That's going to be case crime scene specific. So, you know, things like that, I think will really be great for listeners to hear. And, you know, having more feedback too from the community. I mean, we get a lot of downloads, but we really want to, you know, hear from you as a listener. We want you to be more involved in whether it's just sending us messages through our social media accounts or on our website or sending like little phone messages. We want the feedback. We know you're listening, so we first and foremost appreciate that. Like, we can see the stats. We know you're there. We just want to hear you.
And most importantly with that, like, I want to hear what you want to hear. Like, give us some direction as far as where you would like us to go. Is there, you know, I would like to dive deeper into the management aspect and, you know, have you back on and say, like, okay, as a manager of humane officers, whether it be one or 10 other officers, like, how do you manage that? What do you expect? How do you hire, you know, things like that? Because I know we have some people out there requesting that because it it's a different dynamic that some people just don't know how to, and might help. Maybe your manager actually isn't even in the profession. Mine is a lieutenant of the drug unit. And she got saddled with me. Thankfully, she's an animal lover and has taken the time. But nobody really knows what I do. So being able to say, hey, here, just listen to this one episode, and it might give you some ideas as to how to manage me, because, you know, I'm a little bit of a wild card, but...
Well, and that's what's great about, you know, getting all these different guests on right now, Ashley, is, you know, this is the introduction to Liam Hughes. So if he comes back on to join us, people, you know, either can check out a previous episode that he was on. He doesn't have to go through that introduction again. And, you know, as our listeners are here, and hopefully they remember and listen to all these episodes. It's, you know, 1 hour a week or 45 minutes a week that we're here for you. And so, you know, like Ashley said, I have to reiterate, like, let us know what you want. And we'll bring it. Like, we, you know, we're not, we don't have a corporation over us telling us what we can and can't say. You know, we're going to talk within reason, but at the same time, we're going to talk about what you want to hear. So definitely good perspective. And Liam, thanks for really bringing that up, because as we started the podcast today, I've kind of been remiss in the beginning of the show to ask people to like and follow and do all that stuff. But we do want your feedback, and we do want you to spread the word, because it is, you know, it's not just here for fun. There's things you can pick up and learn from as well.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on. And I do have one final question for you, if there's still time, and you can edit it out if there's not. But resiliency, that's one of the big things I've been really focusing on with my team over the past couple of years. And it's really important that I want to ask you guys what you both do to unwind, to decompress after tough cases and hard days. Because that's one thing that I think that all animal control officers, everybody in this field, humane investigators, animal shelter workers, executive directors, everybody needs an outlet that's away from this so that they can recharge and come back stronger next time. What do you guys do to decompress?
Ashley, I'm going to let you take that first.
Okay. You know, when I'm done with work, I do my best to be done with work. It obviously isn't always an option, because I do have officers that contact me off duty and stuff. And then, of course, it's this anxiety of, okay, are they handling it the right way and stuff? I've got family time. I will say that I probably could use something a little more constructive, though. I don't have anything specific that I do other than clean the house, get done at the end of the night, sit down, maybe watch an episode of TV and do my crocheting. But, and talking to my husband, that one is a big one. You know, I don't obviously give him too many details or tell him who people are.
But running is my go-to when it comes to decompression. But it is that support system, right? Having my girlfriend who gets it. She works in the job. She understands it. You know, she's there. She'll, you know, listens to me when I have issues. I mean, it works both ways. I think she's a better listener than I am. But at the same time, like, I try to do my best for her. And I think, you know, I want to empathize with our listeners, because I know some of you out there will pick up a beer or a bottle, right? I get it. I've been there. Like, I totally understand where you're at. It's easy. It's something that, like, we can just do and kind of, it numbs it. It doesn't take it away, but it numbs it. And so, you know, that's one aspect of it, or just doing things that may not be healthy. And I'm not saying everybody needs to, like, put on their tennis shoes and go for a run, but real talk, like, I mean this sincerely, go outside, get outside, like, take, now that it's nice out, if you live in a community where, you know, it's nice and you can just smell the fresh air, breathe in, like, some decent air without a mask on, you know, being outside, going for a walk. If you have animals, say you're a horse person, speaking of which, we need more horse topics on this show. So any of my horse listeners or our horse listeners listening, but if you're a horse person, like working with your horses or taking your dogs for a walk, or if you have a catio, hanging in the catio with your cats, like, go outside, as I think is a huge thing. So I think, thank you for bringing up that topic. Liam, do you have any resiliency things that you do?
You know, it's hard because it's just pretty much me and the dog. So, and she's not a really good conversationalist, but she does know all my secrets. You know,
she's
and
a good
you're
listener.
Right. Yeah, so she ignores me most of the time, but, you know, she doesn't have a choice to listen most days. But you know, now that it's warmer out and we can get outside and feed the mosquitoes and black flies, I've been really getting out there and going paddling, doing kayaking. I just got a new canoe. I'm planning a 5-day camping trip up in the Allagash this summer to basically celebrate my 50th birthday. So, I mean, that's one of the things I'm setting a goal for myself outside of work. Like if I'm going to bicycle, you know, 5 miles today, if I'm going to do something this every Saturday of just going for a paddle, like, you know, this yesterday, I paddled 3 miles. It was the first long paddle I did. And by the end of the summer, I'll be doing 12 miles. So, that's, you know, awesome, man. Yeah, having those goals, setting a goal for yourself that's not quite work related, but something that can get you to focus on something outside, and finding somebody to talk to that, you know, you don't have to give them every single detail, but just, you know, letting them know how you feel, that you're disappointed in this court case, or that you're sad by this, or that this made you happy. You know, having somebody that you can share those experiences with is really important. I know my biggest problem right now and what I keep going to is I have a problem with Twinkies. The Twinkies got a hold on me, man. I got to go get some counseling for it. But
well, dude, thank you. Seriously, thank you so much for joining us. We're up against it on time, but we definitely want to circle back with you and talk about some of the, you know, pointed topics that we have coming up in the future. So, I thank you personally for coming on and the connections that we made. So, you know, I appreciate the time that you took out today.
No, my pleasure. This was really enjoyable, and I do hope that people get something out of this.
Absolutely. Well, don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, all the socials, Humane Roundup, H.O. Bishop, Animal Protection Officer Daniel. Like us, leave a comment, leave a review. That'll help it out as well. So,
like Sharon Reed, right? And we still got to get her on.
Always here on the Humane Roundup podcast, we like to say, keep it
humane.